It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And that's why I really want to stress, one of the most important things an employee can bring in, or an employer for that matter, is documentation. Let's say they determine that the employee is in fact owed some unpaid wages, then they will make a determination and they will notify the employer, you know, hey employer, you owe this person a certain sum of money.
Former Commissioner of the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry and now private attorney John Barr describes the remedies to workers cheated out of wages and how the government can help. And the complexities of collecting child support across state lines are explained during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 86, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Governor McDonnell and the General Assembly approved a plan to raise taxes on about 114,000 working Virginia families in 2010 through a little-noticed provision buried deep within the state's biennial budget, decoupling the state's earned income tax credit from the federal earned income tax credit. A report released last month by the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis shows that the change will raise taxes by $6 million on about 114,000 Virginia families who earn less than $49,000 a year. By disallowing two improvements to the federal earned income tax credit that are part of the Federal Recovery Act, the budget will increase income taxes of impacted families by a substantial amount. For a married couple with three children, the average tax increase in 2010 is $205. And for single parents with three children, the average tax increase is about $125. The higher taxes will go into effect in 2010. The Recovery Act improved the earned income tax credit by allowing a larger credit for families with three or more children and also extended marriage penalty relief. Both of these changes are disallowed under Virginia's new budget. The report is available at act.virginiainterfaithcenter.org. In other news, on April 27, WellPoint became the first health insurance company to announce that it would end its policy of rescission of insurance coverage when someone gets sick. The new policy took effect May 1. Otherwise, the provision of the new health care reform law that requires an end to rescission of insurance policies goes into effect in 2014. In other good news, young adults are allowed to stay on their parents' coverage starting later this year. Here, too, insurers are stepping up and making commitments to implement this part of the health care reform law early, partly in response to a call by Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius to begin covering young adults voluntarily before the September 23 implementation date required by the law. Early implementation will avoid gaps in coverage for new college graduates and other young adults and save on insurance company administrative costs of disenrolling and then re-enrolling them between May and September 23, 2010. Early enrollment will also enable young, overwhelmingly healthy people who will not engender large insurance costs to stay in the insurance pool. For more information, go to www.healthreform.gov. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for our new segment and the answer to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. Unemployment compensation is available to workers who lose their jobs through no fault of their own. Which two reasons disqualify a worker from benefits? A. A resignation when asked to resign? B. A voluntary quit without good cause? Or C. A discharge for work-related misconduct? The correct answers are B. A voluntary quit without good cause, and C. A discharge for work-related misconduct. A resignation when asked to resign is not voluntary and must be treated as if it were an actual discharge. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for this week's question and answer session. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Dan from Midlothian.
Welcome to the show, Dan. What question do we have this week?
A child support question. My son's mother lives in Washington State and has come to Virginia recently, and I served her with child support papers, and she has gone back to Washington State in hopes to escape the Child Support Act and does not want to pay, and I cannot get the court to go after her for the child support or to garnish her for the child support. They said basically she has to come back into town, and I want to know how I can go about trying to get child support if she's not here.
A question or two from me, and then I think I can answer. Has child support ever been ordered by any court anywhere before?
No.
And did you file a petition for child support with, I assume it's the Chesterfield County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court?
Yes, I did.
And was that actually served on the child's mother in Virginia?
Yes, it was.
And were you actually given a hearing date when you filed the petition?
Yes, I was.
And has that hearing date come and gone?
Yes, it has.
What happened at the hearing date?
She never showed up, and they postponed it. They were serving her with an arrest warrant to come in and be heard. Because she skipped out on the court date that came and went.
And is there another court date set in the future?
No.
Well, that is most unusual, because what should have happened was once she's been served in the state of Virginia for a child that lives in the state of Virginia and I assume was born and raised in Virginia, is that correct?
No. He was born in Seattle, Washington. And the actual custody hearing was in Washington State, which I was awarded full custody, and she was only awarded supervised visits through a guardian ad litem, and I moved to Virginia, and I've been here probably 10 years.
Okay, so her only connection to Virginia is that she happened to come here and was served with the papers?
Yes.
That tells me a lot. That tells me that probably you need to pursue child support through the state of Washington rather than through the state of Virginia, because the law on child support is pretty clear that the court has to have jurisdiction, power, or authority over the person responsible for the child support in order for the court to enter any type of an order. And really, your wife has no connection to Virginia. She didn't live here. The child wasn't born and raised here. You didn't live together as husband and wife here. You're the one who moved here to Virginia. She has no connection to Virginia. She's in Washington State. And so under the normal rules of jurisdiction, the child support has to be established where she is, not where you and the child are. Now, there's two ways to do that. One is long and hard and difficult, which requires you to go to Washington State and file in Washington State the same type of petition that you filed here. The second is also long. It's just not as hard and difficult. You file a petition for child support under UWIFSA, the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. The petition is started here. It is then transferred to Washington State, filed in Washington State, served on your wife in Washington State. You provide your testimony basically by written answers to written questions, which are taken here in Virginia, transferred to Washington, and used as evidence there. So I think that's the problem that you're facing, is that the Virginia court simply doesn't have jurisdiction, power, or authority over a resident of Washington State with no connection to Virginia. And so I would urge you to pursue an action under UWIFSA, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, and you could get information about that from the court services unit where you filed your original petition.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the law firm of Jackson & Lewis. We're speaking with private attorney John Barr. He is with Jackson & Lewis, and he is also a former commissioner of the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
We are going to be talking today about wage claims and also the remedies available from the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. And let's start with the basic question of when does an employer have to pay a worker?
It depends, but typically for hourly workers have to be paid at least twice a month here in Virginia.
Okay, and what about salaried workers?
Salaried workers, it depends on what level they are in the corporation, but it can be once a month or twice a month.
Okay. Now, one of the issues that always arises is whether an employer can take money from an employee's paycheck without their permission. What are the rules on that?
Except for withholding taxes, which are required by law, employers have to have an employee's permission before they can make deductions. And in Virginia, that permission has to be a signed written authorization by the employee.
And if the employee makes that written authorization and later changes his or her mind, what needs to be done?
They need to notify their employer. And employees will typically see this, for example, with deductions for health insurance, deductions for pension plans or 401ks, they'll sign forms, and that's what they're doing. They're giving their signed written authorization.
Now, these days, of course, a lot of employees are losing their jobs, whether they are discharged or simply laid off, or perhaps they voluntarily leave. But if someone is separated from the job, when do they have to be paid?
They have to be paid by the next regularly scheduled payday. So let's just say you're paid every 15th and 30th of the month, and you're laid off on the 16th. The employer would have to get you your final paycheck on the 30th. They can pay you before, but they have to pay you by the next regularly scheduled payday.
Okay, and we'll get into what remedies there are for people who aren't paid properly in a moment. But how do people have to be paid? Are there various ways it can be done? Does it have to be check or direct deposit or cash? Or what are the methods by which people get paid?
You have to be paid in legal tender for the United States. You know, cash or check is acceptable. One area that Virginia is a little different than other states is employers cannot require employees to take direct deposit. So if the employee does not want to take direct deposit, they can't be required to do so, to take it under the law.
Oh, that's good to hear, because I've always heard of employers who have said, you must take direct deposit or some other method other than cash. And I tell people, you know, all the currency that I see says legal tender for all debts. And that's apparently what the law is in Virginia.
Right. The only other way is employers can pay with a prepaid debit card. But the real wrinkle is the no, you can't require employees to take direct deposit.
Okay, now, if a worker is not paid their wages on time, whether they continue to work for the employer or they have separated for whatever reason, what remedies does that worker have?
They have the right to go to, under the Virginia Payment of Wage Act, to be paid, and if they're not paid, they can go to the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry, specifically the Labor Law Division, and file a complaint for unpaid wages.
And lead us through that process. How does that work?
Typically, what you do is you either go into the Labor Law Department. Many people will call first. I used to run the Department of Labor and Industry. Everybody there is very helpful. But typically, people will call first or they'll visit the website and they'll say, hey, I have a claim for unpaid wages. What should I do? And the first step will be you actually have to file a claim for unpaid wages.
All right. So they go into the office. What should people bring with them?
They should have any documentation that they have as to the name of the employer, the location of the employer, how many hours they worked, what their hourly rate was supposed to be, and how much they weren't paid. So let's just say somebody worked for 40 hours at $10 an hour, and they were only paid $200. They would then be owed $200. And any documentation that the employee had, for example, timesheets or anything like that, would be helpful.
So what's the next step after that? This complaint has been taken by the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. What does Labor and Industry do with it?
Typically what they will do is, in many cases, there's an honest mistake on either side. Either the employee thinks that they were due too much, or the employer, through some forgivable oversight, didn't make the correct payment. And what the department will do is they will contact the employer, and they'll say, we've received a complaint from employee Smith, and they say you owe this much, and they'll ask the employer for the employer's position. And typically what the employer will do, will say either, yes, we do owe, you know, we didn't realize that, and they'll make a payment, or they'll say we don't, and they'll submit documents that they may have to show that they don't have that, that they don't owe that money.
So assuming it's a contested case, what happens after that?
Essentially, the Department of Labor and Industry will make a determination. They will look at the documentation and the claims made by the employee. They'll look at the documentation and the assertions made by the employer, and they'll reach some sort of determination as to whether or not they think a person is owed a certain amount of money. And that's why I really want to stress one of the most important things an employee can bring in, or an employer for that matter, is documentation. Let's say they determine that the employee is in fact owed some unpaid wages, then they will make a determination and they will notify the employer, you know, hey, employer, you owe this person a certain sum of money.
And what is the enforcement mechanism? I mean, a determination has finally been made. The employer may agree with it or disagree. If the employer disagrees, how does that determination get enforced?
Almost all the time, the employers go ahead and pay when there's been a determination. If they don't pay, the department, sometimes through the attorney general, it varies a little bit, but they will go to court to try to enforce the payment.
Okay. Now, how long does it take to make that determination? I mean, obviously, you've had an employee coming in. They feel they've been shorted for whatever reason. A determination, a contested issue arises. A determination is made. From the time that initial complaint is made until that determination comes down and a payment is received, how long does that generally take?
That varies so much, it's hard to really give a specific amount. It depends on how long, you know, how big the claim is. Are there multiple claimants against a single employer? How contested is it? It can be just a few weeks. I mean, it can be a few weeks or less. The employee goes in, they notify the employer. The employer says, oh my goodness, you're right. You may get your wages fairly quickly. If they say no and there's a lot of complex issues, it could be several months.
Okay. Now, there's also obviously another mechanism that an employee could do, and they could take their employer to small claims court by filing a warrant in debt. Is that something that the Department of Labor and Industry or you recommend that employees do? Or do you recommend that they pursue just the one remedy?
Typically, I think it's better for employees to go to the Department of Labor and Industry because then you have someone that's well-versed in the payment of wage statute that will look at your claim and can pursue it on your behalf while you're off potentially working someplace else or something like that. A couple of caveats to that. First of all, the department will not pursue claims for, let's say, vacation pay. So if you're laid off, you had 2 weeks of vacation in the bank, you didn't use it, and the employer doesn't pay you for that 2 weeks, the department will say, you may have a right to that money, but we won't pursue it. In order to get that, you would actually have to go to court. So if a majority of your claim is vacation pay, it may make sense to do a warrant and debt and go to the general district court.
And would that same response be true for, say, unpaid sick leave, severance pay, things of that nature?
Yes, that's exactly right. The Department of Labor and Industry focuses exclusively on the unpaid wage portion.
In other words, you actually worked, you performed labor, and for whatever reason, you didn't get paid.
You didn't get your paycheck. That's exactly right. One other area where people sometimes get confused, the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry does not handle claims for unpaid overtime. That is handled through the federal Department of Labor under the Fair Labor Standards Act. So if you have an unpaid overtime claim, you know, I worked 45 hours and I didn't get paid my overtime, your claim then is with the U.S. Department of Labor.
And that was a good anticipation of my next question, which I assume, again, that the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry does not do anything to enforce the minimum wage law of $7.25 an hour.
Well, they could potentially, but you should go to the Federal Department of Labor if you believe you have not been paid the minimum wage. That's right.
Okay. And where can people get additional information about the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry and the various remedies that are available to them?
The best place to go because it is on the web. They will have a sample claim form. There's frequently asked questions. They'll give you contact information so you can find the labor law section closest to you. There are Department of Labor and Industry offices throughout the Commonwealth. And the address, the web address, is doli.virginia.gov.
Well, that's very helpful information. We have been speaking with John Barr. He is a private attorney with the firm of Jackson and Lewis here in downtown Richmond, and he's a former commissioner of the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry, talking to us about wage claims in Virginia and the powers and remedies that are available under the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibility. Here's this week's question. A warrant in debt or civil claim for money must be filed and served before a judgment can be granted. What are two ways a warrant in debt may be served or legally delivered? A. Personally given to the debtor, B, personally given to a member of the debtor's household, or C, mailed to the debtor's last known address. If you know the two correct answer, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Healthcare reform is now the law of the land and could change American society as profoundly as Social Security, Medicare, and civil rights laws. Join us next week when Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, explains what to expect as the new law is implemented over the next 4 years in the first of a two-part presentation. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.